Sí, son los enemigos. ¿Cómo está la cabeza más chulo?
Here's listen to this discourse on stages of the path to Buddhahood with the highest motivation of attaining the PLS state of enlightenment for the sake of helping all sentient beings throughout space who have been once a mother countless times.
Mm-hmm. 사람들까지는 넘친 못해서 담배세에는 관계하고 나 스스로 이 대화한 대화도 누나 먼저 봐. 아니 대화도 누나 타투 준비 타대. 아니 근데 예매에 대해서도 소소리네 대화지지 되니 개체 모르겠어.
Before I talk about Lamrim, the stages of the path topic, it's customary to have the introduction. So for that, I'd like to say that it is obvious we all long for lasting peace of happiness and long for permanent relief from suffering and the causes of suffering. And it's all right to long for these, but how do we go about these? And that in some ways is obvious as well. One has been exposed to Buddhist path.
嗯，他刚才，嗯，他当当，反正南北去的，那要不也是的，他们说，也说是说是的，那人跟台湾那些嘛的，现在说是群聚在的，开车嘛的，那你等把你的他的那些也别怕的，那说是的南北去些的，把这看的看的人多，那第一个就到老街，人家咱们连嘛看的看的多，那肯定群聚去的，他等你去的，可能那么大半夜嘛，说是一几年，那也不要嘛的，每个大大把的。
It's not good to claim that Buddhist path is extremely wonderful, beneficial, and so on. What's more important is to see it for oneself. How, in what way has Buddhist path truly helped beings throughout ages? And how people who have embraced Buddhist path through the ages, living the path in their life, and what outcomes, what tangible, lasting outcomes they have managed to achieve for themselves, and how that out, how the outcomes they have achieved have become resources for others' welfare, and it's. Just go on a scan through or go through Buddhist history and the life stories of great meditators, great practitioners, and what they have achieved. And if we analyze these things for ourselves, then it will become apparent that Buddhist path does have an important role to play in one and others' lives.
嗯，别人从那个时候，从那个时候，俺那时候没去工巴西，当了爹呢。当咱们那地方，门当真弄，他忙着玩，那工巴西也要的。那得了爹，你喜欢什么了呀？当着当当真弄，忙着玩着，一般当那俺就是别跑脱了的。爹当了爹，你那边去了，一起他们买一个，你跟人家要的是。The
feet, Thupten Rinpoche has been displaying, in depth. As well as in his life, what kind of life he has lived, and what kind of person he was, and how through sincere application of himself to practice, what has he managed to achieve, and that achievement is now is there for all to see, how he has tried. A most wonderful death, and he's still lying in peace, in the state of Dhammakaya, you could say, and that itself is a clear proof and demonstration of tangible outcomes that are achievable if only one has the will to apply oneself to a practice. It is also obvious that to achieve such a fantastic outcome and achievement in one's life, it is a foregone conclusion that special causes and means or necessary prerequisites have been fulfilled or were fulfilled. So the special prerequisite to achieve such success in life and in death lies in the techniques of Buddhism in shaping one's mind for the better and refining and fine-tuning the qualities of the mind. Buddhism is like an ocean, and there's a raft of teachings and techniques about how to refine one's mind and improve the quality of qualities of mind. Of these many techniques, the one that is most accessible to one and all, to the beginner and to the advanced, to all levels of, to practitioners of all levels, is a body of teaching called the graded stages of the path to Buddhahood, or called Lamrim. So, the way Rinpoche has been lying in peace, in state in peace, it's a hard to give a common explanation how that is possible, but from Tantra point of view, the kind of achievement that he has been demonstrating is a clear indication that one is on the verge of attaining Buddhahood. And such a success to tap into the deep potential of one's mind in life and at death through Tantra practice is only possible if a person has prepared and trained their mind in the Lamrim teaching and the techniques of refining and fine-tuning the mind suggested in the Lamrim. So, if we follow such the kind of practice that great meditators, great practitioners have done and successes they have achieved, we too can certainly get there, because in terms of the fundamental nature of their mind, the minds that have achieved spiritual heights, and our minds are basically fundamentally the same, in that our all minds are said to be clear, rather pristine and cognitive, pristine in nature, unpolluted by any contaminants of a negative emotion, and not only is it pristine, it is highly cognitive and knowing. And given that basic properties of, given these basic properties of our mind, we too can get there. In doing practice or in applying techniques to refining our mind, there are such things as a formal meditation on particular topics, as well as gathering of merit and purification of the mind. The two things, formal single-pointed and scanning meditation on the one hand, and a gathering of merit and clearance of obscurities on the mind, these two techniques or approaches need to go in tandem. So now what can we do to gather a top sa means gather merits? You could do a raft of things, but all these many things which help gather merits of all kinds have been subsumed under seven things called the pure seven. Dun namdak. Dun means seven. Namdak means the pure seven, or which have been normally called the sevenfold practice. So, the seven pure, or the seven pristine, or seven pristine is a term used of the sevenfold practice when you undertake tantra practice. Before you do actual topical meditation, as in sutra practice, in Tantra too, gathering merit is compulsory, obligatory for effective realization. So these are called dunnamdak in Tantra, whereas in common perfection vehicle, these are called sevenfold practice. Now, what are the sevenfold practice? First, prostration and homage. So, of this, there are three: physical prostration, verbal, and mental prostration. So, there are three. So now I'd like to describe some visualizations with regards to the first of the sevenfold practice, prostration. And you could relate the same process of visualization to the subsequent
six practices.
So if one does this first practice based on bodhicitta motivation, then there's a description which talks about how through the single prostration based on altruistic motivation to bring the highest good of the maximum number of beings, you can gather incalculable merit. You could gather incalculable or immeasurable amount of a merit through procession and so on, based on or grounded in bodhicitta, altruistic intention to the Buddha, in four ways. You gather immense merit through practice based on bodhicitta because the scope of bodhicitta is not some 100,000 or some million or some billion people or beings. It takes into consideration infinite number of all sentient beings throughout universe or throughout space, because on the strength of the enormity of the number of bodhicitta takes into consideration, you gather immense merit. You also gather immense merit through practice grounded in bodhicitta, for bodhicitta's with the altruistic intention. The person, the practitioner, aims at attaining the state of a Buddhahood or to become a Buddha themselves. Once they become Buddha, what do they have? They have inconceivable amounts of qualities of body, spirit, and mind, and so on. So considering the height and the extent of qualities Buddhas have, you, the practitioner, or one, the practitioner, stands to gain, you know, merit necessary for such qualities. You also gather immense merit because the resolve a person with bodhicitta is immense in that the person has resolved to undertake not just a small body of practice, an ocean of bodhisattva practices. So the bodhisattva ideals are as vast as the ocean. And the person with the bodhicitta is prepared to embrace the entirety of bodhisattva ideals and goals, therefore they attain vast merit through practice. So, fourthly, they achieve immense merit because when they resolve, when a practitioner resolves to undertake bodhisattva ideals for the sake of all sentient beings, then they do so until the state of a Buddhahood is achieved. In other words, they vow to undertake bodhisattva ideals until the state of a Buddhahood. And therefore, when considering the enormity of the length of time during which they are prepared to embrace the entirety of bodhisattva practices, they stand to gain huge merit.
Mm-hmm.
So in this way, whatever practice one does, for example, doing a single bowing to holy objects called all, but even if you do a single prostration out of all pure bodhicitta, altruistic intention to Buddhahood, intention to achieve Buddhahood, then considering these four reasons, you as a practitioner will gather much more or much greater amount of merits from a single prostration than an arahat of the lower vehicle who has achieved arahat and meditates on emptiness for eons. If you could complement the motivation of a bodhicitta with the right view of emptiness, right view of absence of intrinsic existence of all things, particularly particularly the act of prostration, the object to whom you prostrate, and so on. So if you can manage, if you can see that your practice of bodhicitta, your practice of prostration is grounded in bodhicitta, but also in the right wisdom, the right view, understanding emptiness, then there's no doubt this will help achieve the two states of Buddhahood, because even if somebody has a suspicion that things are not what they seem to be in terms of or what they actually are, and the mere suspicion of emptiness or mere doubt of a true existence, intrinsic existence, according to great masters, will shred into pieces the otherwise strong root of a mundane existence. On top of motivation and the right view of emptiness, the difference in amount of merit gathered can be accounted for in terms of the person who prostrates. If a person with some Buddhist vows or for ordination and so on, if they do a single prostration, but didn't offer the vows they have in their continuum, the merit that they gather will be 100,000 times greater than somebody who doesn't have such vows. So there are lay Buddhists and ordained Buddhists. With the Buddhists under vows, with some kind of vows and commitment for life, so they are called lay Buddhists under vows, called upasaka or upasaki. And then after that, you have the ordained Buddhists. The ordained Buddhists, you have a novice monk and novice nuns. And then you have a fully ordained monks and the nuns. So successively, they married together by the ordained, fully ordained Buddhist monks and nuns will be 100,000 times greater than that of a married gained by a novice monk and so on. It's also said that if an ordained Buddhist undertakes a single practice at such times as now, when the teachings are past declining and at a critical juncture, the marriage such an ordained person gathers is again 100,000 times greater than if the same ordained person were to do the same practice during good old times when Buddha was alive and so on. Yet again, a prostration done by a bodhisattva, ordained or not ordained, would be equally 100,000 times greater than the merit gathered by an ordained Buddhist without a bodhicitta in mind. And finally, prostration done by a person with a tantric vow, the vows of tantra, would be inconceivably more, and the difference is as big as the sky and the earth. Then the merit gained by a person with the bodhisattva, only with the bodhisattva vows. So, so a person with the vows of tantra, with the vows of a practice of tantra, were to recite, let's say, were to say the name of a Tathagata or a Buddha, out of veneration for Buddha, the merit that they gain will be simply
incalculable.
However, according to the seventh Dalai Lama, called Gyawa Kesan Gyatso, Victorious Kesan Gyatso, according to him, reciting or saying the name of the Buddha of Compassion, Avalokiteshvara, is yet again more meritorious than reciting the name of any other Tathagatas or Buddhas. There, the seventh Dalai Lama says, the marriage of venerating and reciting the names of countless Tathagatas, the merit of worshipping, venerating countless Tathagatas is same as reciting the name of Avalokiteshvara once. And yet again, personally speaking, personally as okay, individual as an individual practitioner point of view, for them, it is again inconceivably more meritorious to recite the mantra, the name mantra of your own guru, then recite the name of Avalokiteshvara, the Buddha of compassion. And you could have quite a few spiritual mentors or gurus, and one of them happens to be somebody who has given you all teaching, including teachings of Tantra, and have initiated you into that discrete practice of Tantra, empowered you, and explained the techniques of practice of Tantra. So that is called a Vajra Guru. Reciting the name of that guru is said to be 100,000 times more meritorious than reciting the names of other gurus. So this is the difference in the amount of merit one gathers. Now, the difference in terms of who you prostrate to, it is recorded in scriptures that prostrating to a bodhisattva is 100,000 times more meritorious than prostrating to an arahat, or a person who has achieved personal emancipation or liberation and resting in peace for inconceivable length of time. Prostration to one Buddha is 100,000 times more meritorious than prostrating to
100,000 bodhisattvas.
So, prostrating and paying homage out of reference to the hair paws of the guru is yet again more meritorious than prostrating to countless Buddhas. So what does this word hair paws refer to? Hair paws refer to relations of the guru. Even the pet a guru may have, that is considered a holy object for the devout. However, now when you, I shouldn't say however, when at the time of prostrating to any one of these many objects, and with the right motivation of a bodhicitta and wisdom, so on. So if one undertakes a single prostration, for example, seeing the three kings as non-dual or inseparable. Lama means your guru, Yidam means your deity, personally, you know, transcendental deities or deity, and your mind. If you see the three kings as indivisible and offer prostration, the amount of merit you gather in such ways is so powerful that it will accelerate your, or they will increase the pace of your attaining Buddhahood. So it is said that if you go to do any practice, for example, during the prostration, in these manners, particularly considering or with the conviction that the guru, deity, and your mind are indivisible, then you gather that kind of a merit that even bodhisattvas on a high level, even bodhisattvas in the common perfection vehicle, at high levels, would take, you know, great length of time to gather these merits. In other words, the merit you gather from a single prostration done in this manner is much more than bodhisattvas will ever manage to gather after a long period of time. So, doing a single prostration could incorporate the Buddhist practice of what is called method and wisdom, and the single prostration could also incorporate the six practices of bodhisattvas called the six perfections. How a single prostration could incorporate both Buddhist practice of method and wing, the two wings that we need to soar to the state of Buddhahood. So, for example, when you do a prostration and you think to yourself that the three factors involved in prostration, the person, the object to whom you prostrate, and the person who does the prostration, and the act of prostration are interdependent. Because they are interdependent, they are devoid of any intrinsic nature. And that understanding of the absence of three factors, absence of true existence of three factors of prostration, will help achieve wisdom. That will constitute wisdom. And when you can, although intrinsically speaking, the three factors do not have any intrinsic any objective for existence, yet they do still exist. How do they still exist? They exist in a dependent way, and the dependent existence, interdependent existence of the three factors is very much like an illusion. So at an illusion, at an illusion like level, the three things still exist and perform great functions of a gathering merit. So that fulfills the method part. So in what way prostration incorporates six perfections, or if the six perfections are extended in 10 perfections? So if you do prostration in order to gather merits aimed at achieving the highest good of all sentient beings and eliminating their problem, their suffering, so that is that constitutes chugi jinpa, generosity of teaching. So ethics, the perfection of ethics of prostration is also fulfilled such that when you prostrate to a sublime enlightened object, if you can fulfill the requirements of requirements of sublime physical speech and mental behavior attitudes at the time of prostration, and so that fulfills the ethics. And patience, perfection of patience is fulfilled when you don't, you try to overcome any sense of tiredness and weariness in prostration, because prostration will entail physical hardships. But if you are prepared to put up with physical hardships, and that is patience. Fourthly, if you do the prostration or prostrations with a sense of enthusiasm, then that fulfills the fourth perfection called perfection of enthusiastic perseverance. Rather than as out of a duty, but doing it out of delight and enthusiasm. It also fulfills practice of concentration or perfection of a concentration. If one maintains clear awareness of why, who, one prostrates, and as well as all other attitudes or thoughts, conducive thoughts necessary involved in the prostration. So paying attention to the details of mindset, the reason, and so on, while doing prostration, fulfills the fifth perfection of concentration. If one offers prostration with the clear knowledge of the advantages of prostration. What does it mean if you manage to do a prostration? What do you gain for the, what do you gain altruistically or personally? So having the clear knowledge with which one offers prostration fulfills a part of a wisdom, a perfection of wisdom, particularly a perfection of wisdom of prostration is, as mentioned before, seeing the three factors of prostration as lacking any intrinsic entity. So, because of these, it is mentioned, it is stated that tantric practice, practices done within the framework of the principles and the rules of Tantra, will help gather merit faster, sooner, therefore accelerating the pace of attaining Buddhahood. According to Sudra system or common perfection vehicle, it takes a long time indeed for a sentient being to evolve from the state of sentient being into a Buddha. It takes what is called three great countless eons, three periods of a great countless eons. Forget the true eons. Even if one were to consider the number of years in a single eon, it's a mind-boggling. However, with the Tantra, it is said one can manage to achieve the state of a Buddha. One can evolve into Buddha in a single human lifetime. And this is unique to Tantra in general, but to achieve the stage of a Buddhahood in a single human lifetime at such a degenerate time as now is unique to highest yoga Tantra. And yet again, it is that if you do, okay, yet again it is that it is the tradition of Lama Tsongkhapa, special tantric practice, which ensures, rather, which helps attain, I should say, which helps attain the stage of a Buddhahood within 3 years and 3 months.
まあ、たてんでじがね、のそ中層のね、そじが。たてね、女の子もそこは心配が。ね、やっぱりやばて、たたんでてがね、しょっちゅうこんさんだてね、そのとんにね、そうそうたんじやれ、そたてもせね、まあ、なめどんで、ちょっとそんで、ともまいもももばやれ。てんでじちちかんがそうね、た女の子もてばね、ようせなまいね、ためようにやまれて、しようともももばてちゃね、そんじゅうこんばにやでやれ。
So in the tradition of Lama Tsongkhapa, in the tradition, particularly of a tantric tradition of Lama Tsongkhapa, there are special techniques whereby one can gather merit soul paths, wisdom soul paths, which are different from what I've already talked about, and whereby within a matter of 3 years and 3 months intensive practice, one can make it to the state of a Buddha, yet, you know, I cannot go into the details of this practice and instructions, for it requires a formal empowerment and initiation. So anyway, many great practitioners have embraced this special technique and the instructions, and they have proved that the technique works, and that the techniques can be repeated, and as a result, reliability of the technique has been established. So, with reference to a single practice of prostration, you can do, you know, you can achieve, you can do amazing things in terms of applying the four antidotes. For antidotes, or applying what is called the five powers. The five powers, which are special, which are small branch of practice that comes during Lojong mind training context. So, these sevenfold practice, for example, prostration, the second one is making offerings to the sublime beings, and so on. Some people tend to consider these are practices for beginners, and they tend to overlook the importance of these. Geshe-la says these sevenfold practices are encompassing in nature, to be practiced by one and all, regardless of their level of development. For example, in the life of Narupa, the great Indian tantric adept or Mahasiddha, what you need is not so much actual resources, but the willingness to do a practice. So in the case of Narupa, when asked by his guru, another Indian master, Talupa, to offer him mandala, Narupa didn't have anything at the particular time. And all that he managed to do was to offer his guru a mandala of mud, a mud mandala, and by offering a mandala made out of mud and water, there and then special realizations took root in his mind. For example, there was another Tibetan, another story, this time a Tibetan master of a Kadampa tradition, and there was this Kadampa master called Gampopa. Gampopa. And he had attained such a high degree of single pointed concentration to the point that his practice of gathering merits from prostration, offering, and so on suffer a little bit. Therefore, Atisha, the intern master, who was his teacher, gave him a piece of his mind. You can recall the life story of the 15th century Tibetan master of this order, Lama Tsongkhapa, who after mastering Buddhist studies, yet had not gained a set profound realizations. Therefore, he went to an isolated place to focus on concerted practice of merit gathering. And there, he is said to have done nothing but prostration, mandala offering, and so on. So prostration happened to be the key practice that was needed for him to clear the mind of any remnants of obscuration. So when one carries out the groundwork, if the preparation is done, if the groundwork is done well in terms of doing these practices, not just doing them in a mechanical way, but with a fervent knowledge and thoughts, and if one manages to complete the groundwork, then realizations tweak. You don't know when, how it happens. It happens. And without having to work too hard, realizations tweak. It's all right, is it? Yeah. So let me share a story, anecdotal case of two prominent masters of a Kadampa tradition. There was these two masters. One was called Nanjurpa, the yogic. And he indeed, as the name says, was a great meditator and had achieved a great level of concentration. And there was, on the other hand, Dromtampa. So they met sometime later, and then they had a relative comparison of their spiritual heights, not with a sense of competitiveness, but they wanted to check each other where they were. And it turned out that Dromtampa, who did nothing but serve, who was an attendant, PA, if you like, or attendant to his guru and nurse his guru all his life. So his realization happened to be higher than that of the meditators. So, if you find yourself, or if somebody finds themselves, despite their concerted meditation on deity and various topics on various graded lamrim topics and topics of tantra, whatever, and yet, you know, no tangible realizations have taken place apart from a vacant state of mind, empty mind, maybe where some twinklings here and there, nothing else happens, that is a sign that the groundwork has not been complete. So I've talked about prostration, but there are seven practices in the pure seven or the pristine seven, and then one being prostration, second being offering, third is confession, and fourth. And the fifth, the fourth one is rejoicing, and rejoicing, and then the fifth one is requesting gurus to live on. The sixth one is
beseeching them to stay,
and requesting gurus to live on, and the practice of requesting gurus and Buddhas wherever they are to live and keep teaching, and then the next one is the practice of dedication and so on. Anyway, there are seven of them, and if one can do these seven practices in the manner I briefly talked about, in terms of for motivation, in terms of for the person, the status of the person, object, in terms of for seeing the guru, deity, and one's mind as inseparable, and so on, then merits, you'll gather more merits than otherwise. So these are quite crucial information about how to gather merits, past, thick and past, if you like, quickly. So the knowledge of these matters again helps one value the worth of human life that one has achieved this time, and because the fact that one is somebody can gather merit, gather wisdom in such an accelerated manner, and then move past towards the altruistic goal of Buddhahood is made possible by the potential, the special potential that human life has. And therefore, if you know this, the knowledge of these matters will help one reevaluate one's life and do what is good in the long term.
Tendu
A practice, a sound practice from which immense merit that people with the right conditions can gather will be far-reaching and will be something that people who have not had, you know, exposure to information about their life and the potential of their life and the practice they do. People, so anyway, what I'm trying to say is such people will take incredible length of time to gather merits. The same amount of merit that you, for example, might gather in a matter of an hour. So today I have this morning I have talked about the crucial techniques, attitude and mindset necessary behind sevenfold practice. And next time I'd like to elaborate each of the seven practices, and I'll stop here today. Any questions? Yes?
Ishila said to, when you're doing your prostrations, to like join your guru, your deity, and
your mind.
One.
Yeah.
Yep, but how do you know who the deity is, who your deity is?
Kishila ane chigi tamba chig karna usane chigi ane chigi nyamne kare chebe na sraba ane chigi lama yidam rangsem yeme to komna chebe na ta mixte ke na ga chimbu re sraba jesa lama de yidam ane so yidam ti kare so ju ngai yidam ti ba ti gende ha ko re sa Who is my meditational deity?
Identifying
who one's deity is a matter of a tantra, you know. If you, for example, if you have received initiation into highest yoga tantra, mm-hmm. There are four levels of tantra: action tantra, performance tantra, yoga tantra, and the highest yoga tantra, Anuttara yoga tantra. So when you get initiation into the highest one, and one of the stages is entry to the mandala. And when you enter the mandala, then you do some things. You observe your dream the night before, and you also throw flowers, you know, petals of flower in the mandala, and the petals will fall in different directions. And that also helps you determine who your deity is. Particularly, you know, the class of the five classes of deity and who you have affinity with, and that is done by dropping flower, as well as you also you hold a kind of a stick, small kind of, and you also drop that in the mandala, and the way it points, the head, the top, that also the guru can then tell you, you have connection with this deity, with the deities of this family, the five families. Five families are associated with the five aggregates that we have. Anyway, since, you know, it's possible in that way.
So when
you participate in an initiation ceremony or rite, and when you are going through the stage of you know, dropping petals of the flower, and the stick, then the guru will instruct you, now make your wish to establish with the deities of the five family with whom you have a closest connection, and pray earnestly for correct identification, and then the guru will say, you drop it. So anyway, I'd like to appeal to everyone to do the best practice you can manage to do. Okay, if no further questions.
Can we do the dedication on page 7 of the yellow book? In? It's 13 of the blue book.
Yeah.
May all beings everywhere plagued
by suffering of body and mind, obtain the ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creatures suffer.